Well, thanks, Lydia, and thanks, Val. I'm Steve. I'm our senior pastor. I love that thought about finding ways to sort of follow and connect with God that really work, and then when they aren't working, to be able to have the courage to make a shift. And I'm hoping that whether your life is very public or private or somewhere in between, there'll be something in this part of the service, too, that encourages you and helps you connect with God's life for you. I'll just mention real quick on a final announcement front that a happy Memorial Day weekend to you. I gather this, despite the weather, is like the unofficial start of summer. As our official summer starts in June, a reservoir will, as we did last year, shift our calendar a bit. So the next 3 weeks after today, we'll be on our regular Sunday schedule that we're on right now, where we'll have 9:30 and 11:30 services. The 9:31 with the kids programming going on, although we had today a lot of our kids with us at 9:30, so we took a break. But on June 24th, we'll start our summer calendar. For 11 weeks, we'll have a single 10:30 service. So you can show up at this time, but you won't get much. if that works for you, that's fine. But we'll be running a 10:30 service so that as people travel and take vacation here and there, we can have one really full service as opposed to two smaller services. And so that'll start in about a month's time, and we'll remind you here and there in advance. I want to go way back for a minute as I get started, not just in an earlier time in adult life, but when I was a kid, and I was thinking recently that I was not always a very good grandson. But then again, not all of my grandparents were very good grandparents either. Here's how my family still tells the story. So one set of my grandparents lived close to us, and they were like second parents to us. We saw them every week, sometimes several times a week. We would take turns, my brothers and me, sleeping over their house, raiding the refrigerator, spending, as a family, pretty much every holiday with my grandparents. And we had nothing but kind words for one another. But there was this other set of grandparents we had that lived a little further away and that we didn't see as often, and so the connections weren't quite as warm and familiar. And one time when no one was listening, that grandmother, annoyed by something I was saying, told me, "Shut up, Stephen." And I thought, ooh, that didn't feel like a very grandmotherly thing to have said to me. And I was so angry. I was so angry that I held a grudge against this grandma for years. I didn't want to see her. I didn't want to talk to her for years after this. The problem was that I was the one that looked really bad holding this grudge, because this grandma was really nice. She had all the manners. She cooked big Sunday dinners when we would visit her for our family and all kinds of other friends or relatives she would bring over. She asked us polite questions about our lives. She started small talk. She gave us presents. See, my family system, this was my Southern grandma from Western South Carolina. And so nice was all that she knew. In her case, though, her well-studied niceness didn't make me feel seen or wanted. It didn't make space for me. It certainly didn't want to make me give up my grudge, because the niceness that I experienced from her seemed like perfunctory, a kind of obligatory, even kind of a test. Like every time she was nice, it was to wait and see if we would be as nice back to her. And it was pointed out clearly when we weren't, which clearly I wasn't. This I experienced as niceness, but not as kind. Hold that thought for a second. We're in the second week of this five-week series called The Jesus Model for Everyday Interactions. It's inspired by a book an old friend of our church named Carl Medeiros published recently about this topic, and we've got some copies of that in our lending library if you're interested. And in the second section of this book, Carl says, so you want to change the world, try being kind. And he quotes this legendary military man who said one time that if you want to change the world, you should start by making your bed in the morning. I think the idea is like if you take care of the small stuff, you know, the big stuff will follow and take care of itself. And so Carl says, okay, my version of that is if you want to be like Jesus, start out by being nice. And maybe that's great advice, and Carl's a friend of mine, so I don't want to quibble with him too much, but I want to quibble a little bit today with this interchanging of the words nice and kind, as if they're the same thing. because I don't think that they are, not at all. So today, I do want to encourage kindness. I want to see how a God who is deeply kind to us might also give us the joy of deeply kind lives as well. Kindness is God's mode of being with us, because God is simply deeply kind. Kindness is also part of the call of Jesus to people who want to follow Jesus. And kindness is simply but rather remarkably transformative. But it is not the same thing as just being nice. Not at all. When I was in high school, I had an English teacher named Ken Jones. I've talked about him before because he made a really big impression on me and the way he handled tragedy when I was a student in high school. Both of his children died during that era, and his resilience was nothing short of remarkable. We formed a really unusually close teacher-student relationship. I wrote an essay about him when I was applying to college, and he was my pen pal for a while after I first moved out of home. But what struck me first as his classroom student before I knew him was that Mr. Jones was not especially nice, but that he could be really, really kind. Sometimes when we walked into his class and sat down, Mr. Jones would just sit at his desk and stare us down in silence, like for a few minutes. He didn't always seem like he wanted to be there. He could be irritable and kind of depressive, which obviously makes sense once you learn about his life story. But sometimes he would point out rude or bad things kids had done somewhere in the school that day, like after the silence so that she would start class. And then he would say, like after this, what sounded like sort of gossip, right? Like all these awful things he had seen someone do today. Then he would say, oh, it's not their fault, though. And we think, oh, wow, nice Ken Jones coming out. But no, not at all. He would say, it's not their fault because bad people just do bad things and they can't help it. We think this is kind of like a strange way for your English teacher to start class, right, after staring you down for a few minutes. This was not nice. And yet, this man could be really deeply kind. We had journals in this class that we needed to write. I think we'd write a certain number of pages, and you'd collect them every week or two to, you know, just check that we had done the writing so we could build up our capacity as writers. I believe we were in 10th grade. And at least with my journal, though, I realized he really read what I wrote, all of it. And he'd write back to me after he had kind of digested it, like really specific things to say in response to things I was writing about. He was engaging my thoughts. He was taking my 15-year-old self seriously, which was not an experience I'd had from other teachers, or really from adults at all to that point. And that noticing of my thoughts and that valuing of my words, like despite his sort of weird affect and not very nice disposition, that communicated to me that I mattered, that I was interesting, that I was worth the attention of someone who seemed more important than me. And that was really kind and important to me. I think Jesus had this quality about him too. I listened to this short interaction he has on a crowded road when he and his students were traveling together. This is one of the two scriptures in your program if you want to follow along. It says, they came to Jericho. And he and his disciples and a large crowd were leaving Jericho. Bartimaeus, son of Timaeus, a blind beggar, was sitting by the roadside. When he heard that it was Jesus of Nazareth, he began to shout out, warning, he's shouting, and say, Jesus, son of David, have mercy on me. Many sternly ordered him to be quiet. Shut up. But he cried out even more loudly, son of David, have mercy on me. Jesus stood still and said, call him here. And they called the blind man, saying to him, take heart, get up, he is calling you. So throwing off his cloak, he sprang up and came to Jesus. Then Jesus said to him, what do you want me to do for you? The blind man said to him, my teacher, let me see again. Jesus said to him, go. Your faith has made you well. And immediately he regained his sight and followed him on the way. I love this passage. There's so much that's really interesting in this passage. There's the meaning of Bartimaeus' name, like son of Timaeus. There's a lot there. There's the significance of blindness and sight in Mark's memoirs and in some of the other good news accounts, the life of Jesus. There's this title, Son of David, that the man gives to Jesus while he's on the way to Jerusalem, which is known as the City of David, where he would be hailed as a king and executed in the same week. This is a really interesting encounter, and Mark packs a lot of meaning to very few words. But I want to go back to the basics, like the human quality of the interaction for a moment, the stuff we could march right by on the way to those deeper meanings. First off, this is a crowded urban moment. Jesus had arrived in an unfamiliar city, is surrounded by strangers, but his reputation has preceded him, so he's treated like a kind of VIP. So there are a million reasons for Jesus to keep to himself. There's the fatigue of travel. There's the disorientation of being in a busy, unfamiliar place. The shyness and stress a person from a small town like Jesus was can feel in a large urban crowd. And there's the fact that Jesus is busy, and Jesus is important, and he's on his way to somewhere else. But the somewhere that Jesus is today is the city where the son of Timaeus lives, this man whose disability plus his bad breaks in life have left him on the side of the road begging. And what's happening in this moment is what we usually do with people who are relegated to lower status or people whose voice is inconvenient or whose behavior we find disruptive. This man's voice is silenced, right? Even as he gets louder and louder. His person, his body, his needs are marginalized. Everyone that knows him doesn't care. They just want to keep him out of the way. But Jesus centers him. He says, I want to see this man. Jesus stops. He stands still. He calls him over, and he asks him that question, what do you want me to do for you? It's not necessarily the smoothest moment, like, what do you want me to do for you? Is this arrestingly direct question? I read it the way I did, because I think this was just probably a very unexpected moment in the life of this man. It might not be particularly nice, because anything that kind of creates a more awkward or less smooth social interaction, like, doesn't feel nice. And so in this, I feel like Jesus is more like Mr. Jones than my grandmother. He may or may not be nice. He's not necessarily kind of smooth here, but he's deeply kind. He's present physically and emotionally to this person in front of him who people generally aren't present to. He is present to this person who interrupts him. He's deeply interested in the voice and wants and needs of the person in front of him and eager to help. And then in one of those Jesus moments, like it happens, the guy can see. But even then, when it happens, Jesus says to him, like, oh, it wasn't me, it was you. Your faith, your trust did it. Way to go. I think Jesus shows us exactly what God is like, fully present to us and deeply generous and kind. It's not the picture of God that our culture or that our tradition may have given us, but it's Jesus and Jesus' first followers' insistence that Jesus shows us the best and the truest picture of God that we'll ever see. And so we see this picture of the God who has time for interruptions, the God who centers the previously marginalized and hears voices that others want to silence, the God who has time for people and looks at us and speaks to us kindly. After all, I think even when God is seeking change in our lives, which isn't nice, I suppose, to like ask anyone to change or to encourage change, but it can be kind to want more for someone or to want better for someone, but the way God gets there is kindness. God woos rather than threatens. God encourages rather than, you know, yelling at us in a loud voice. So the letter to the Romans, the New Testament, tells us God's kindness is what leads to change, or it says God's kindness leads to repentance. Jesus shows us what a kind God looks like. I think Jesus also shows us what we can be like, people that mirror God's kindness to ourselves and to others. So kindness isn't just like a favor to the world, although it is that. It's not even just a reflection of the love of Jesus to the world, although it's that as well. Kindness is us coming into our nature as children of God, made in God's image, becoming the kind people that we were made to be and that the world longs for us to be. It's possible, of course, maybe for all of us, at least for some of us, to be both nice and kind. Many of you will know my friend Kate Nelson. She's out of town this weekend, but I asked her if I could talk about her. Maybe that's why she went out of town. I don't know. But she lives in the neighborhood, more or less. She is co-directing our Soccer Nights program for the neighborhood in the last week of June. She used to be on staff at Reservoir doing that and all kinds of other things for her work before she left Reservoir to pursue other career interests. Anyway, though, when I think of someone who is both kind and nice, one of the people I think of is Kate. She's thoughtful, and she's attentive to the people she's with, unusually so, and she's friendly, she's good to people, and she's especially all these things with children. If you've ever seen Kate with kids, you've seen her looking at them in the eye and like really interested in what they have to say, enthusiastically asking them questions. You've seen her playing with them and actually having fun as she does it. Perhaps you've seen her dancing with kids at our church retreats or like up front here at the end of a service when kids are around. See, I think where so many adults more or less ignore kids, Kate really sees them. She doesn't just say hi and like wait for them to move on. She centers her attention on them, responsive like to their person and to their voice. And if you haven't seen this before, if you'd like to learn like how to do this, you do really need to sign up and join us at Soccer Nights end of June. It's a really fun week. It is possible, though, of course, then, to be nice and kind. Jesus was nice and kind with kids, and I think it's a mark of a follower of Jesus to be both nice and kind with kids, and Kate is one of the people that shows us how. But if you have to choose just one, really nice, really kind, pick kind every time, because niceness is sometimes just politeness. Niceness could be all the well-taught, appropriate manners of my grandma, for instance, with no time or generosity or attention or love under it. But kindness, to see someone, to be interrupted and give your generous attention and presence and goodness to someone else, that kind of kindness is transformative. My friend Sarah Firstie is a pastor at one of our sister churches, a church called The River in Manhattan, and she was talking recently about the difference between kindness and niceness, and she said this. She said, even though we often exchange the two, there's a big difference between nice and kind. Niceness can be rooted in lack and fear and can emerge from our deepest insecurities. Kindness, though, is rooted in the abundance of love. Niceness can ignore the truth of who we are, but kindness emerges from the compassionate essence of who we are. So again, like niceness without kindness, just social graces, being polite, like keeping things kind of smooth and appropriate, can actually be a way of avoiding genuine connection with another person, right? Niceness can keep interactions really smooth and unremarkable, which is fine, but not if that's all they are. That kind of niceness can actually avoid conflict when conflict is necessary. It can avoid the expression of need, can avoid really seeing or hearing or bringing our real selves to the table. That kind of niceness actually keeps other people at bay, right? Because, you know, maybe we're afraid, we don't have enough time or energy. That kind of niceness kind of keeps ourselves closed off because maybe we're afraid the world doesn't have enough time or energy for us, or we're insecure, or maybe we're disinterested. But when we're kind, like whether we're a really naturally nice person or not, when we're kind, we're giving our attention generously, whatever we see and hear. We're present to the other person with our whole heart and our whole mind and with all that we are, even if it's for like a really short amount of time, like 42 seconds. That's actually the title of Carl's book. Even small amounts of real present kindness can be transformative. For instance, I went through the McDonald's drive-thru the other week when I was in a rush for lunch. This is not the kind of system that I personally want to keep investing my money into. If you remember my talk about not putting your money into bad systems I gave a couple weeks back, I was thinking about this. But there I was at the time at McDonald's. And I made my order with a disembodied voice in the intercom, as you do, and pulled up to the window to pay. And this young woman there smiled at me as she took my money. And I gave her my money, and I looked her in the eyes, and I asked, how you doing today? Like this tiniest moment of kindness on my part, right? To try to be present to a stranger during a, you know, exchanging of money, a commercial interaction. But then she looked back at me as she took care of my money. She was really good at her work. And she said, I'm doing really well today because I'm looking forward to going home this afternoon and spending time with my mother. She told me, she said, in my country, it's actually Mother's Day today, and I can't wait to get home and be with my mom. So thanks for asking. That's how I'm doing. And so I told her, I was like, well, I hope you have a really great afternoon, and I wish your mom a really fabulous Mother's Day, too. And then it was time to, you know, pull forward and get my greasy lunch, and like the conversation was over, like 42 seconds, you know, at the most, maybe less. But whatever small, tiny kindness I offered her by just like asking her how she's doing, looking her in the eye, I felt like I was the one lifted up by that interaction. I drove away, and I don't know, maybe because it was just unexpected, it's a small thing, right? But I felt so great. I was talking to people about it for a while afterwards. I'm talking about it now, right? And I thought, why did that mean so much to me? Like, kind of, I'm like, how often do I experience, like, me and another stranger having, like, an actual, real, interested connection, even if just for a moment? And for me to experience that from her was actually a real kindness to me. I think basic human kindness like this, like even small stuff, this is actually no small thing, because it's at the center of the teaching of Jesus, including what we've come to call the golden rule. One more quick scripture, and then we'll wrap up. Jesus teaches this, says, do to others as you would have them do to you. Some of the famous words Jesus ever says, do to others as you'd have them do to you, right? Treat the customer in the McDonald's drive-thru the way you want them to treat you. If you're on the other side, talk to the retail staff behind the counter. You would love, the way you'd love them to talk to you. Like, treat children the way you wish adults had treated you as a child, or the way you want kids to grow up and treat others. Talk with your grandchild, or talk with your grandma the way you want them to talk to you. Interact with your students or your employees the way you want them to interact with you. Like, be to your teachers or your boss the way you want them to be with you. But then Jesus continues and is like, oh, by the way, it's really easy to do this with your friends and family, which I think is in fact not true. I will politely disagree with Jesus here and say, I don't think so. But Jesus, well, it's relatively easy, but this is also the way of Jesus for people you can't stand. Jesus continues, if you love those who love you, what credit is that to you? For even sinners love those who love them. And if you do good to those who do good to you, what credit is that to you? For even sinners do the same. And if you lend to those from whom you hope to receive, what credit is that to you? Even sinners lend to sinners to receive as much again. But love your enemies. Do good and lend, expecting nothing in return. Your reward will be great, and you will be children of the Most High. For he is kind to the ungrateful and the wicked. Be merciful, just as your Father is merciful. People have been reading those words for like 2,000 years. I still find them utterly arresting. Right? To be like Jesus is to be kind to the people who have nothing to give you but trouble. To give your attention to people that really don't deserve it. When it comes to boldly loving even our enemies, it's probably obvious that niceness isn't what Jesus has in mind. It just doesn't cut it. Jesus wasn't always nice to his enemies either. Sometimes he told the truth to them. And truth-telling, no matter how you do it, almost by definition isn't nice, right? To kind of cut somewhere deeper and truer than people expect. Like, no one experiences that as nice. But Jesus never dismissed his enemies. He engaged their questions. He looked at them and saw them. Did what he could to disarm them with kindness. This disposition toward kindness and mercy, Jesus says, is what God is like and how God is interacting with every human being on earth right now. So Jesus says this is also the disposition and life that Jesus is longing to shape in us. We'll come back to that thought because it's like a big one and a hard one on the last of these invitations. But I want to wrap up with four closing invitations and pray for God's help for us. The first of them is going to be an encouragement to connect with a kind God. Each week in this series, we're encouraging you to connect with God's love for you in some way, and also to be present with that love in your everyday interactions. And so we have these cards that our Pastor Ivy has been making each week out in the Dome Gallery, and they're two-sided every week, one for sort of how we welcome God to us, and the second side for how we try and take that experience of God and offer that to others this week with kindness. Anyway, the first encouragement is that when you pray, imagine Jesus as gladly attentive to you and your desires, eyes and ears fixed on you. I think likely if you pray at all, there might be lots of ways you do this. You might sit down and just start talking to God. Maybe you use your own words first, or maybe you use the words of a prayer that you've learned. Now, maybe you sit in a particular place at a particular time of day, as I do, or maybe you pull out a journal to write things down, or kneel, or take a walk, or maybe your prayers are mainly spontaneous things you find yourself saying while you're stuck in traffic or trying to fall asleep or nursing a baby. Now, all that's good. God's available to talk with or think about anytime, anywhere. But how often do we envision and remember God as attentive and alive and good and interested in us? If you're like me, maybe not enough. So when you're going to pray, or when you find yourself praying, try stopping for a minute and imagining, like before any words come out, that Jesus is with you and that Jesus is attentive and looking at you and listening to all that you have to say, even the things you aren't sure how to say, and that Jesus is doing that with great interest. I say the word imagining because picturing Jesus with us is powerful and important, and that's what our brain's doing when we picture that, but not because it's imaginary. Actually, this kind of imagining, which has more often been called contemplation or meditation in the spiritual tradition, this is actually a way of dialing into a greater reality. Seeing God as God is revealed in Jesus, making sure that if we're going to try and talk with God or listen to God, we're talking or listening to God as God really is. And so when you pray, pause and ask yourself, what kind of God am I actually praying to? And trust, oh, that's a God that's present to me, attentive to me, eager to listen, cares about my desires. And then secondly, for a day, maybe for a week if you can, give each person you encounter the 42-second or so favor of your full attention and your kind interest in them. Again, in this series, we're trying to be attentive to the daily things, the small things of life, because they're both the building blocks to greater things, but on their own terms, they're pretty powerful too. So really, for as many days this week as you can handle, like try simply giving each person you encounter, including people that interrupt you, strangers, each person, a minute or even a little less than a minute of your undivided attention, your uninterrupted interest and kindness. This could be as simple as looking someone in the eye, maybe asking a small question or engaging the answer to that question for a moment. If you try to see what this does in the people you encounter, try and notice the effect you have on them. And even more interestingly, like see the effect that this habit has on you. And if you try this, I would actually really love to hear your stories. You can let me know in person or send me an email. I'm curious to see what this experiment in small kindness is like for us. Thirdly, adults, which is the great majority of us in the room, see every kid as a full-fledged person who'd enjoy your kindness. And kids, as there are at least a few in the room, try the same for the adults in your life. I'll speak much more to adults here. Love for children seems to be one of the unique hallmarks of Jesus' kindness. Like if you're doing this, it's a mark you're on the right path. If you don't have kids in your life at all, there are lots of kids in the world, you can consider treating with kindness the kids that you bump into or the ones that interrupt your rhythm in public places. Or you could consider volunteering for soccer nights at the end of June, as I mentioned, or connecting with our family's pastor, Kim Messenger, and asking about serving in our Sunday kids programs this summer or next fall. And kids, I think the same goes for kids, right? That the adults in your life are more likely than not annoying to you sometimes, or mysterious, or busy, or grumpy. But adults obviously are people too, with our own strengths and weaknesses, our own good parts and bad parts and problems. So we owe the adults, the kids in our life, kindness. We'll see, our kids, what's it like to be kind to the adults in our lives too? I mentioned that love for kids is one of the unique hallmarks of the way of Jesus with people. But the other, as I shared earlier, is love for enemies. And I just want to close by saying Jesus doesn't call for niceness to our enemies. Jesus doesn't ask us to kind of smooth things over with people behaving badly or behaving badly to us, pretending that's not so, just smiling. No, not at all. Jesus didn't do that either. But Jesus does insist on love. Again, it would be easy to go really impossibly big with this and get intimidated. Like, what do we do with people or situations that actually frighten us? Or how do we do this with the people we really, truly most hate or who have most deeply wounded us in our lives? I think those are important questions, but really like a whole topic for another day and not the place to start with this way of Jesus. Again, in the spirit of this series, I'd encourage you to start small. For instance, like the people in public life that you don't know and will probably never meet, but that you really can't stand. Maybe that you even really hate. You all have these people, right? And think like, well, you don't have to like them. You certainly don't have to be nice to them, because again, you're never going to meet them. But you could consider praying for them when you think about how much you can't stand them. You actually can. I've tried to do both of these at once. Think, I can't stand so-and-so, but then offer a prayer for them in that same moment. You really can. It's possible. And pray that God will bring more love and more truth into their lives, a way of practicing the spirit of Jesus. Or kind of the people that you can't stand that you actually meet in life, but, you know, not on the top of the I can't stand them scale, but just people that annoy you. So it's just like, as you register your annoyance, to think, how could this annoyance be like a trigger in me to offer back attention, kindness, and love? And like, as an experiment, to see like, what is that going to do to this dynamic? What does that do to me? What does that do to them? I think that's a way to start small with this really powerful way of Jesus, and I commend that to you. This stuff's hard. I think, I get the point Jesus is making, but I think it's even hard sometimes the people we like and we're close to. And so I'm going to pray for God's help and power in this, and then move us on the service. Why don't you join me for a moment? And we'll practice the thing I shared earlier, like just for a very short prayer, so maybe for 10 or 20 seconds before I pray. I invite us all who'd like to imagine Jesus with us, not just like hypothetically, but like in the room. Jesus here in the Reservoir Sanctuary, and not here begrudgingly or bored or something, but like really glad to be with us, attentive to each person in the room and to our wants and needs. So I'll give it like 20 seconds of silence, and I invite you to imagine that Jesus is here in the room, gladly interested in our prayer, and then I'll pray for us briefly. Our good God, thank you that you are gladly with us. I'm so grateful for Jesus in many ways, but one of them means that I'm just grateful that this idea of you gladly with us is like taken on flesh. It's really vivid. It's particular. So thanks that you're here in the person of Jesus by your Spirit, God. Thanks that you're glad to be with us on this Sunday. Thank you that this gathering is just like, it's a pleasure for you. Thank you that you are attentive to each person in the room, interested in our needs and concerns and lives. We pray, God, that as we sing, or as we just sit around the room over the next 20 minutes or so, that we would be aware of your kindness and love and gentleness to us, and that would kind of soak in and do some good things in us today. Amen.